Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. In his Prolegomena to Any Future Metaphysics, Immanuel Kant, in the preamble on the peculiarities of all metaphysical cognition, in part 4, is going to set out, we could call it, a rudimentary history of what he takes to be the central problem up until this point, a problem that he takes himself as providing an adequate solution to. And the question is about the discipline or domain or science, Wissenschaft, of metaphysics. And he says, you know, there's two questions that we can ask. And one of them is, if there were a metaphysics which could maintain a place as a science really existing, could we say, here is metaphysics and it will convince you irresistibly, you can't possibly hold back from it, and irrevocably, once you're convinced and you're not going to change, of its truth. I mean, that is a high ideal for any doctrine, particularly philosophical doctrines, not just in metaphysics, but moral philosophy, aesthetics, pick whatever you want, right? Can we actually arrive at a set of, however you want to think about them, bits of knowledge, cognition, judgments, propositions, arranged into a body of work, a real science, that would be completely convincing to anybody who wasn't just being, you know, perverse or stupid or something like that? And Kant says, you know, that's maybe not the question to ask quite yet. Here's another question that we can ask. How is this science of metaphysics possible? Möglich in German, right? Or adding to that, if it is possible, how does reason attain it? How does reason actually get there and produce this ideal of a complete science? And then Kant is going to say something really quite interesting here if we think about its implications. So, as opposed to Euclid's Elements of Geometry, for geometry as a science, there's no like standard book for metaphysics. And it's not as if people haven't tried to produce them. I mean, think about, for example, René Descartes' Metaphysical Meditations, or Meditations on First Philosophy, right? Or think about John Locke and his essay concerning the human understanding. It's a, you know, an attempt to supply something new which will replace the others. Even Hobbes's Leviathan presents itself as being the only true science, right? So this is a common project in modernity, providing a, you know, once and for all thing. And there isn't a single book that we can say, yeah, everybody acknowledges that, everybody agrees on that. Now, a little bit of a detour here, really historically not that long after Kant is, you know, writing this and flourishing in his prime as a philosopher, we will have non-Euclidean geometry begin to arise, right? So we know now, you know, if you take a geometry class today, unless you're doing a kind of old-fashioned-y thing, you're not reading Euclid. You're reading some college textbook, and it'll talk about the difference between Euclidean and non-Euclidean geometry. So, you know, let's say in his time, Kant was technically right, but Euclid doesn't hold that sort of status. Be that as it may, what's the point for metaphysics? We have, like, system after system after system being proposed, and there's no one single book. And what are they supposed to be doing? Well, this is where we get to the contrast between dogmatism and skepticism. Now, when Kant is using this term dogmatism, he is not using it in exactly the same way that we tend to use it today, where we say, oh, you're just being dogmatic, meaning you've sort of committed yourself to some point of view and you're not going to budge from it because you've got your beliefs and perhaps you haven't actually thought them out very well, but you just took a stand and that's it, right? Skepticism, similarly, we often will say, oh, that person is a skeptic or they're skeptical. Not meaning that they don't believe in anything, but that, you know, they tend to be distrustful of what it is that people say. And dogmatism and skepticism in these senses have been around since the ancient period when we had the rise of the skeptics, the skepticoi, the seekers. And, you know, they come in a couple different schools or flavors or types. We've got the sort of extreme skepticism of, well, I can't be confident in anything. Maybe nothing is true. I don't even know that, right? And then we have a much more pragmatic, sort of probabilistic skepticism that we see developing in Plato's Academy when it takes a skeptical turn after some extreme skepticism. You know, Cicero himself is influenced by this, and that will often like contrast points of view against each other and say, well, we're not really sure which of these we should buy into. And the skeptics would often take the work of what they call the dogmatists, the philosophers who are committed to dogmata, plural of dogmas, and say, look, they have different points of view on the same topics. They can't all be right. We don't know who's actually right. Or let's, you know, give this person a limited approval as probably being more right than this one, but we can't be quite sure, right? So that's skepticism and dogmatism. And Kant says that dogmatic philosophy has failed to recognize that they're working with what he calls synthetic a priori judgments. So he says, you can be shown many judgments that are apodeictically certain and never questioned, but these are all analytic and rather concern materials and scaffolding for metaphysics rather than the extension of knowledge. You know, that's what synthetic judgments allow us to expand our actual knowledge or cognition. And that's what we want to do in metaphysics. So dogmatic metaphysics does seemingly expand knowledge, but it does so by appealing to synthetic a priori judgments that are themselves not grounded. And he says, you point to, for example, the principle of sufficient reason, which you never proved as you ought to from pure reason a priori. And then when you try to use these, you lapse into inadmissible and uncertain assertions. And what does this mean? Well, we're not getting to the irresistible and irrevocably convincing. It's convincing to one person or a group, but not universally. And so one metaphysics contradicts another. We have multiple contenders to metaphysics out there arguing with each other, oftentimes not even fully understanding the other's point of view. And Kant is saying, that's not the way a good science actually works. This isn't science. This is just a bunch of different sects, you could say, with their own points of view, arguing with each other, contradicting each other. He also has another very interesting metaphor here. He talks about metaphysics floating to the surface like foam, right? And what does he mean there? So, you know, you've got maybe you're brewing something or you're boiling something. Think about stock, right? And the foam is the kind of stuff that you've got on the surface, and it's not really good for anything. And as soon as you scrape it off, it's all a bunch of bubbles, right? The bubbles pop and the foam dissolves. And Kant says, you know, that's not really a problem for these dogmatic metaphysicians because they just wait till some more foam comes to the surface and they scoop that off. And so we get a bunch of things, none of which we can actually place credence in, none of which we can actually say are sciences. And that leads to skepticism. And, you know, this appears early on, as I mentioned, in the ancient period as a reaction to seemingly contradictory dogmatic metaphysics. Metaphysics plural, right? There are different claims that are being made, and the skeptic says, you can't all be right, and probably none of you are right. And how the hell would we know which of you are right anyway? Now, Kant says something else about skepticism. I mean, if it was just that, then it would be not a bad position to take. But in skepticism, reason, Vernunft, the highest faculty within us, at least as far as this goes, he says, treats itself with violence. It actually does violence to its own self. It comports itself in that way. So this is not actually good for reason to be engaging in, right? And he tells us that skepticism doesn't promise us anything, not even to rest in permitted ignorance, disquieted by the importance of knowledge so much needed, right? And why does it do this violence to itself? He says the complete despair of ever satisfying our most important aspirations. You know, dogmatic philosophy and metaphysics arises because we as human beings really do have a deep yearning to understand these matters. So it's arising out of despair. It's interesting because the word that's translated as despair could mean that, but it's actually closer to a kind of deepened doubt, right? Verzweiflung, right? Zweifeln is to doubt. Verzweiflung is turning it with the Ung into sort of a substantive, an activity, and the Ver intensifying it, transforming it in a way. And so this is a deepened, it can be despair because you have doubts and you don't think you'll ever be able to resolve them. And that's why reason can turn against itself in that way. Is there a way out of this dilemma of dogmatism and skepticism? Kant says yes. And what you have to do in order to get there is ask this critical question that is not being framed by a lot of metaphysicians. Is metaphysics at all possible, right? And this is going to the how is the science possible? How does reason attain it? This is what he's going to be talking about in next section of this preamble and then in the rest of the work. And he says that we cannot go the route of dogmatism, just making something up that sounds good, because it's not going to be convincing. We need to have something that will be convincing and convincing in a lasting way for all rational people. And we can't go the skeptical route. That's not going to be helpful for us. We can have a skeptical attitude and be like, well, you need to prove things, right? But this sort of hardcore commitment to skepticism and using reason against itself in this case is not going to work. So what do we have to do instead? We have to use reason in a different way, in a critical way, with the what he's going to call the transcendental philosophy that we find in the Critique of Pure Reason. And he says, in the critique, I have treated this question synthetically by making inquiries into pure reason itself and endeavoring in this source to determine the elements as well as the laws of its pure use according to principles. The task is difficult and requires a resolute reader to penetrate by degrees into a system based on no data except reason itself. So reason is examining reason and scrutinizing it. And so it seeks to unfold knowledge from its original germs. So Kant is saying, listen, there is no like easy answer to this. You got to check out my big old book, The Critique of Pure Reason, or you can have some of the same stuff presented to you in an analytic fashion in the Prolegomena, because I've now done that. But these are just sort of preliminary exercises. They're not the totality of the critique, and so they're not the entirety of the way forward or the resolution of this fundamental problem, this question, how is metaphysics at all possible?
Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.